All right, everybody, welcome back to another high caliber, action-packed episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. Man, I am so excited. The markets are going crazy. We're recording this on a great day. And Brendan, I mean, I'm jazzed up. How are you feeling raining from the other side of the country, the East Coast?
I'm just as hyped up over here. I mean, how can you not be? There is positive information everywhere you look about the crypto space. In fact, I think it would be a difficult time right now, Bryce, to go and find some negative catalysts, some negative news, because everything is just on fire. You look at the technicals, the fundamentals, you look at adoption on a global or domestic scale, everywhere. We are firing over here, so we're hyped up. And as per usual, we're bringing in the biggest and the best in the space to talk about everything crypto.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, the stars are aligning, not only for a Bitcoin season, as everybody knows. It's like we can, you know, get questions all the time. Oh, it seems like it's a Bitcoin season. Bitcoin dominance is you know, riding higher. Is there any slowdown? When altcoin season? I think we're feeling it. I could feel it in my gut. You know, we've been here, you know, trading these markets for the better part of almost 10 years now. And it feels like there's finally, you know, some really good substance. There's some really interesting projects out there, that are generating a lot of value. And so, we brought on today Tim Chen, who is the global, head of strategy, at Mantle. And so Tim, we are so excited to have you come on, talk to us all about what you guys are building. But first, how are you doing? And are you sharing the same level of excitement as us?
I'm pumped. I mean, if you told me, I mean, a year ago, we saw the corporate treasury play start manifesting in the US post ETFs, right? We saw MicroStrategy get more volume behind it. We saw Metaplan in Japan. Today is a phenomenal day. Because to your point about altcoin season, you need altcoin season. It happens when Bitcoin dominance comes down, which usually happens when ETH has more wind in its sails. And today there was announced that Joseph Lubin, founder of ConsenSys, is building the MicroStrategy for Ethereum. I mean, who better to be the head of that type of product and lead the charge there, right? For institutional TradFi Wall Street adoption. So we're pretty pumped.
Yeah, it's great for us. It's great for everything you guys are building. But let's take a quick step back. We always like to ask just a personal sort of question here to get things kicked off, get you acquainted with our audience and vice versa. And it's really just we want to know a touch about your journey into crypto. You obviously were working in the investment world long before crypto was really a twinkle in your eye. And so tell us what that transition was. How'd you get pulled in over here into the crypto world?
Yeah, so my background is pretty eclectic. I'd work both in the Wall Street side of things, across banking, hedge fund, then to Silicon Valley. I was at Uber a number of years building out the Uber Pool product. And then I was poached to build out micromobility out in China. I mean, we invented the concept of bicycle and scooter sharing. So, you know, that company, I guess, was to blame for littering your sidewalks in your downtown if you see the Lyman Bird scooters that copied us. And then I was in venture capital for the last half decade, investing globally in Web2, mostly consumer, fintech, logistics tech type companies. But off the back of the last cycle, I started our proprietary Bitcoin mining shop out there and slowly edged into looking more in crypto, really by virtue of when you saw interest rates skyrocket to 5%, right? Emerging markets and other economies went down. You really only had two options to invest in, right? Either you were long Mag 7 or you were long Bitcoin and or Ethereum. And so that really just pushed me further into the crypto world. Mm.
You know, what kind of similarities did you see between incubating those early stage companies? I mean, you've worked with some behemoths. Mm-hmm. I saw Animoca, Mobike, Uber, I mean, a handful of other names. Did you ever see any similarities between incubating those and the growing crypto market?
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus. Attention cigar enthusiasts. Today, we're thrilled to introduce to you CigarBid, America's number one online cigar auction site. If you're looking for unbeatable deals on every type of cigar, listen up. At CigarBid, you have the power to set your own price, often scoring top quality cigars and accessories at prices much lower than retail. Others want you to believe they are always giving you their best deal, but at CigarBid, you get to decide the deal. It's the cigar site the rest of the industry does not want you to know about. Score deals at the best prices every single day. The live auctions are fast-paced and exciting, making every bid a thrilling experience. Check out Freefall to watch the prices drop in real time, or the Power Hour for our fastest-paced auctions. CigarBid has a text update, so you get notified when you're outbid and get exclusive deals right to you. And if bidding is not your thing, then no problem at all, because you can buy the cigars straight up at awesome low prices as well. So no matter what you're looking for, you'll find it at CigarBid. So if you're ready to enjoy the fun and the convenient way to purchase fine cigars at great prices online, visit cigarbid.com/crypto101. That's cigarbid.com/crypto101. Happy bidding.
Yeah. So for some of those, I was part of the early journey. Some of those I was mid, and some of those we were just investors in. Okay. So, but to your point, right, the question is, what are the core layers? And I think we're at a point on how do you translate the benefits of what we see on tech side and provide them to the masses? And I think the easiest is to think about what the work we did at Mobike. So I was head of international product there and expansion. How do we bring a very unique Asian product, which is bicycle sharing, right? And the way you scan and ride the bicycles, you scan it with a mobile phone and it's digital payment. How do you translate that to a Western audience, which 10 years ago, Apple Pay was really not a thing, yeah, right? And so it's we're at the same chasm now, which is how do you bring a unique product that has unique sets of skills, understanding, and logistics and tech behind it and simplify it for the mass audience?
Totally. Yeah, no, it seems like, you know, crypto is just one of those, you know, to me, it's like, you know, crypto and AI. These are the two fastest growing sectors in the world. I think, you know, it's all also evident, you know, we had the president come in and say, hey, we need a czar or like a new head of crypto and AI. And so I think everybody who's listening right now, we're just in such a Goldilocks period, because now we have kind of the vindication of a lot of these, you know, nascent crypto business models that for a little while there, it's like, you know, things are so early stage and there's high risk and all that kind of stuff. But now I think people are starting to get compensated for that early risk taking sort of behavior. And I kind of wanted to like ask, you know, you've got like, you know, great experience in, you know, all sorts of different markets. What do you kind of think is like the advantage of launching a token or having a token? Because, you know, sometimes people are like, you know, well, why don't you just go raise equity money? And it's like Mantle Group decided, hey, we're not going to go, you know, raise a bunch of equity. We're going to, or maybe you did, maybe you didn't. I don't know. Maybe we could talk about that. But primarily, a lot of the fundraising was done via a token. And so could you kind of talk about that dynamic there?
Yeah. So actually, so our genesis and our background is we started out actually as a investment DAO. And we have strategic partnerships with the likes of, I mean, at the time, anyone from some of the biggest names in Web2 in terms of investment funds, as well as in Web3 sectors such as Bybit. And so that's how we started. We started as a massive community-owned DAO looking to make investment decisions, right? And then we realized, okay, well, you know, we can't scale those investments fast enough. The process is broken from a DAO perspective. Why don't we build something? And so we built Mantle as an L2 when the whole L2 narrative came to focus a couple of years back. And Mantle as an L2, I mean, we're sitting at $3 to $4 billion FTV. We built out a suite of products. We built out a suite of features and attracted a lot of great names to our ecosystem. And then we realized, okay, well, after the Shanghai upgrade, proof of stake, we were sitting there and we saw the likes of Lido do well. We thought, okay, well, we should get in that business. And so we built METH, which is our version of staked ETH. We also have a restaking protocol baked into it. And it yields a bit higher than what you would otherwise get on Lido. And that's sitting at close to $1 billion TVL. And I want to specifically know, it was just announced recently that a publicly listed company in Canada wants to build a strategic ETH treasury reserve using METH. So we're the first to market on that regard. We're super pumped, super excited.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And thank you. Thank you. And so, okay. So about 18 months ago, we're like, okay, well, METH did pretty well. What else do we like? Well, we like this thing called Bitcoin. What's interesting out there, right? We see the biggest product in Bitcoin is Wrapped Bitcoin, outside of obviously Bitcoin itself. and we want to take a bite of the business. So we co-built Function BTC with the likes of AntAlpha and Galaxy to be that wrapped Bitcoin instrument for yield. And that's sitting at about 1.2 billion TVL as well. So we were successful and we realized we're good at shipping these products and going to market. And that was at the end of last year, near the end of last year. And so we took a step back and we said, okay, well, what still exists to be solved in the crypto market? What are some of the biggest problems we are facing? And we feel that the biggest ones are driving mass adoption, right? If we think about crypto and technology's adoption on an S-curve, I think we solved the first piece of that S-curve, which is through trading brokerage accounts, getting people excited about trading tokens. But to onboard the masses, let's say the next 50% of people around the world, you really need to simplify the user experience, right? You need to have people adopt it through a form factor that they trust, it's easy to understand, and it's convenient. And so that's what we're focusing now. How do we build products using our tech stack, our liquidity stack, to onboard the next billion users, onboard the next $1 trillion of institutional capital?
And it sounds like, you know, it's like, I think Mantle is maybe misunderstood by people because people just think, oh, it's just another layer two, or it's just another, you know, sort of, it's got this just another, you know, what's called liquid staking token, but like it's so many things. So like at a high level, how do you kind of distill like what Mantle really is? Because it's not just a layer two. It's not just a liquid staking platform.
Yeah, great question. So I get that's the common misperception, and that is because we did start out first as an L2, right? So it's not right. It's not misappropriated by any means. So the Mantle, I want to draw a very clear distinction. Mantle network is the L2. So okay. The network, we are building an on-chain liquidity hub, right, with the likes of ETH, FBTC, et cetera, for capital to come in, get the best yields, get the best experience on DeFi. And so that's the network, and that's what we're looking to solve for. Mantle, in terms of what we're doing, our ethos is how do we bring TradFi and DeFi closer together, both on the retail and institutional side? How do we make a sustainable ecosystem for these projects, right? How do we, in our words, like bring crypto to your everyday?
Absolutely. And like when you kind of position all the incredible things y'all are doing against the MNT token, where do you see the interplay?
Yeah, so the MNT token is just a governance token, right? Not too dissimilar than every other token out there for a lot of projects like Uniswap, et cetera. So I think the bigger question here is, what are we doing differently as an L2 or protocol ecosystem versus other ones? Totally. The easiest way I like to explain is that when you look at other protocols and tokens, protocols and ecosystem, they are building very horizontally. They are building very, hey, I'm going to build this platform, build this protocol, maybe have an ecosystem fund, maybe have some grants. Come, build on me, right? I will give you grants. You get a grant. You get a grant. You get a grant. today we're doing DeFi. Tomorrow doing games. The next day we're doing DePIN, right? Or now we're starting to see a convergence towards specific niches, right? You see folks specifically focused on RWA, like the likes of Ando. You see folks specifically focused on gaming or DeepIn, which I think is the world we are going. Now, that is one way to build. And I akin that more to like an open source kind of network. Everyone comes in and sings kumbaya and people build together. But in reality, what gets done is you need a strong centralizing force to really carve out the use case, the users, the transactions for people to come, right? And that's not a ding on decentralization, but it's just two different ethos on building things. So that's the approach we take. We like to akin it more like a Apple approach, where backed by our community-owned treasury, which is about $3.5 billion, depending on where ETH is trading, is now the largest on-chain treasury, right? It's completely community-owned, DAO-governed. We then look at our ecosystem and say, okay, what's missing in this tech stack? What's missing in the value chain? Should we go build it ourselves or should we partner with another player and help them build for that? And so those are the two approaches we're taking. It's a bit more surgical, right? So what that means for builders is that, yes, we are still supporting them, but we're a bit more choosy. But if we're choosy, it means we really want them to win. So I'll give you an example, right? Let me first talk about the ecosystem partners and then talk about kind of the ones we are building ourselves. So on the ecosystem partner side, we were instrumental in anchoring the initial TVL and thus the successes of the likes of Ondo and Athena. And we were also investors there, so we're tight in regard to that relationship, right? So who else can start a new project and get an anchoring investment of like 100, 200 million TVL. That's like unheard of, right? So from our perspective, we wield that community-owned treasury very responsibly in terms of where we want to focus and invest. So then back to the point on what are we building and where we differentiate, we have these products that we've carved out in-house, right? So METH, the network, Function BTC. And that comprises three of the six pillars we're focusing on. There are three new ones for this year. One is AI in its early stages, and we're angling a bit more towards integrating Web2 dynamics. So less native Web3, but more integrating how crypto sets the interplay on AI for Web2. Mm-hmm. So that's one pillar. The second one is a crypto neobanking product. We want to bring the neobanking product and experience to users, to onboard that next billion users, right? They have have a product they understand and they trust and it's convenient, right? Like your parents or your grandparents, or they're not going to onboard into crypto via a Coinbase or Kraken account, right? You log in, numbers are flying everywhere. They have no idea what these token pairs mean, right? Yeah. It's just not good, right? But a neobanking app, okay, there's been at least a couple decades worth of people understanding that user experience now. So the ethos there is building a product that's easy to understand. And the last one, in terms of how do we think about onboarding the next $1 trillion of capital from institutions into DeFi, well, it was announced that Mantle Index 4, this product launched on Mantle. It's an index fund product, and it's targeting just that. So I can talk about each of these in a bit more in depth, but back over to you guys in terms of where you want to focus.
You know, I recently talked to Preston Van Loom, and he's an Ethereum main chain developer. He's worked with the Pectra upgrade and then the proof of work to proof of stake upgrade. And I was asking him, because my thought is, you know, are L2s going to get to such a place where they compete or take away from the Ethereum main chain or the Ethereum L1? And when I asked him that question, he very firmly believed that that was not going to be the case. He said L1s and L2s serve two different purposes. He says the L1 or the main chain is meant to be like very broad in what it's supposed to do. And the L2 or all of the L2s are supposed to be a much more like niche focused, where they are focused on solving a specific problem. And he had this firm belief that there's not going to be a competitive aspect where the L2s get so good that people won't have a reason to use the L1 anymore. Is that something that you would agree with?
I think in theory and ethos, yes, but the devil's in the details, right? It really comes down to, okay, well, think of it this way. Ethereum is the wholesaler of block space, and the L2s are the retailers of block space, right? They just package what's on ETH mainnet, focus on niche, and sell it to someone else who needs that specific use case. Now, okay, but if you're selling, for example, jeans, you're reselling jeans on the L2, and your margins are not that high because of how it's sourced on the wholesale level, then you're going to have a challenge. So what I'm trying to say is, like, the devil's in the details in ultimately where the unit economics shake out on the relationship between L2 data costs and L1, as well as that specific use case, right? Because if there is no specific use case and you can't find one, then as an L2, you're kind of just bleeding.
I think that's a fair point, and it kind of raises the question, like, is that, or do you think that that's even the correct approach?
Like for the L2s versus like the monolithic approach, is what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, are we going about this the right way right now for Ethereum? Or like, do things need to change? And I guess that's kind of where Mantle comes in, and that you do have a little bit of a different approach here. But we're solving these issues, and it seems like a lot of different groups are trying to go about it in different ways. But like, are we on the right path right now?
Yeah, I think broadly, the pie is big enough for multiple types of products and services to exist, right? Solana exists with all its benefits and caters towards a specific crowd and use case, and Ethereum does the second. I think Solana has done a fantastic job in recent history of coming back from, you know, the FTX implosion and everything to where it is today in being a top chain for transactions, whether it's meme coins or otherwise. But if you zoom out and you look at where all the RWAs and institutional capital is flowing into, and if you talk to them, their comments are oftentimes, it's still Ethereum because that's safest, most secure, more importantly, has enough depth of liquidity for us to transact on it. And so I think it really depends on who you're speaking to. But there is a world where different wholesalers exist serving different purposes. And I think the key is, like, can the EF, Ethereum Foundation, work with all the L2s and be nimble enough to adjust and grow over time, right? It's not set in stone like a Bitcoin is.
Yeah, totally. So I want to go back actually to the Mantle index that you were talking about, and I want to unpack kind of what's going on, because this is something that I've been looking for just as a personal investor in crypto, trying to, you know, you just play the field by getting index exposure, and there's not a lot of great on-chain indexes. I've kind of been following the index cooperative for a while, and there's just no liquidity behind there. Bitwise has some good index products, but they're all in a brokerage account. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing with the Mantle Index.
Yeah, you nailed it on its head. I'm friends with the Index Group guys. I think they were just too early, right? Yeah. They were at a stage where people didn't need to aggregate because they're too focused on new token launches, right? So that's where most of the value is. But in today's world, because there's so much noise, new capital coming in, it's easier for them to say, you know what, just aggregate it for me, set it and forget it, charge me a fee, right? That's not too dissimilar from what we saw how ETFs ate up the traditional finance world, was it 20, 30 years ago? And predominantly passive ETFs, right? These strategies that give people broad-based exposure to whether it's thematics or otherwise, and through more superior distribution channels, are able to capture higher AUM, or as we call it, TV on-chain. So unpacking Mantle Index 4 a bit more, what's unique about this product is when you zoom out, right? You think of the meta today with respect to RWAs, outside of these T-bills coming on chain, everyone is trying to build more TradFi assets, tokenize it, sell it to capital that's on chain. But that doesn't really make sense, right? If you think about it, who wants a 79% yielding REIT from the Midwest that's illiquid? It doesn't really make sense. If you look at the capital on chain, we have about, last I checked, 100-ish billion dollars of TVL locked in DeFi, 300 bills, 400 of stablecoin market cap. Whereas if you look at TradFi, let's call it $100 billion of capital locked away in just Bitcoin ETFs alone. And whereas on chain, it's a large majority of the capital, in TradFi, this is just like a drop in the bucket, right? Yeah. TradFi is still not here yet. If you are any familiar with how RAs and wealth managers work, and I built ETF products in the past life, these have not been cleared to be sold through brokerages yet, like the Fidelities, Wells Fargo's, Merrill Lynch's, right? If you attend these conferences, they're still saying, hey, RIAs, this is a generational moment where you can sell to your clients. So I think there's still more buy pressure coming. But you know, why MI Mantle Index 4 stands out is we are selling to that crowd, right? As in this product is selling that crowd instead of trying to capture on-chain capital. It's saying, hey, there's a lot of capital that can today buy Bitcoin spot via ETF. They can buy Ethereum spot via ETF. They can buy Solana spot via an ETP in Europe, right? But why isn't there a product that just aggregates all of these, mm-hmm. right? Because these are the majors today. And one big trend in TradFi is if you can get income, well, naturally ETH and Solana are proof of stake, and so they do yield. So we're both providing them broad-based exposure and income. So the way this product is set up is it's comprised of four assets. You have Bitcoin, you have METH, which is the Mantle staked ETH product. You have BB Sol as the Solana product, and you have SUSDE, which is a yield-bearing stablecoin. Now the latter three yields income from being staked, and that is rebased back to NAV. Now here's the kicker. Because we are not targeting on-chain funds or whales or crypto folks to get these themselves, this product is structured as a TradFi. It's in TradFi wrapper. It's structured as a fund. So when you're a TradFi investor and you're looking at this, it looks like a duck, talks like a duck, walks like a duck, right? And so it's easy to understand. Right. It's like, why did people buy MacroStrategy before? Because it's the only way they can get broad-based exposure to Bitcoin without going through all the hoops and hurdles of, you know, other whatever checks they need to do internally to get to buy Bitcoin directly and hold it in like some custodian account.
Yeah, man, I think you make a good point. And it seems to be that that is the direction that we're heading to, especially as more and more people want exposure. And we're not just talking about retail. I mean, I'd say in the last 6 months, we have seen an institutional push like we never thought was possible. And I've seen you talk about this recently, and you've talked about this idea that there is this TradFi DeFi bridge and latent demand, and how 2025 is shaping up to be the year that crypto becomes a part of everyday finance. Mm-hmm. So I guess beyond some of the things that you just mentioned, I guess, what else are you seeing behind the scenes?
Huh. In terms of bringing crypto to everyday, I think the craziest one I saw was Moonshot, right?
Yeah.
You're telling me somehow these guys created an app that you can buy a meme coin through the Apple App Store? Like somehow make it make sense, right? I think they did a very smart way of figuring out, I assume legally, to make it happen, and props to them. Right.
Yeah, and that's a good point, actually. Before you move on, Moonshot, I'm a big fan. There's somebody that was on I think they were on our podcast, or I heard it somewhere, about like when the Trump token launched, they like added, Moonshot was like the hub. It added like, I don't know, 500,000 or a million users over the course of like a week. It was like everybody didn't sign up for Coinbase because Coinbase was, you know, didn't list it right away. They all went to Moonshot. So that's a great call out. We got to get them on the podcast. I'll make a note. TiVo, make a note to reach out to them, because that'd be a great guest. And but keep going.
I think what's interesting there is, again, what they've done is abstract away all the things that's happening back end, right? My understanding of what they're doing is, technically, when you buy a token, you are on-ramping to buy a stablecoin to a self-custodial wallet that's not discernible to you unless you want to export that wallet. And so for you, it's like, it's a Web2 experience. And that's the same thing here, right? The crypto neobanking product we are building has a similar zeitgeist. So today, there's two types of users: those that are denominated in US dollars and those that are not denominated in US dollars. So let's focus on the ones that are not, because those are the ones that find crypto and stablecoins as a 10x better use case, right? And you don't really understand that unless you've traveled to international countries, like specifically Argentina or like a Turkey, where your currency is devalued, you know, pretty much, you know, in a matter of months. So what's interesting here is, okay, well, how products today are mostly what I call DeFi mullets, right? They issue you a self-custody wallet and you have a globally accepted MasterCard or Visa. Cool. But that's only one direction. I can only spend. But if I'm saving in stablecoins as one of these users, how do I make it my main bank account type experience, right? Mm-hmm. And so our product has solved for that specific piece of the stack. And today, outside of Americans can't do this, but today you can onboard within 5 minutes, KYC, you get a Swiss bank account and a globally accepted MasterCard. Like,
wow.
You're telling me anybody in the, well, a lot of, except OFAC sanctioned countries too, of course, but you know, that really opens up the world of crypto to a lot of people who otherwise were not able to access it via a very safe, familiar, convenient type user experience.
Yeah, no, it's, gosh, being American sometimes is difficult, but you know, it's in crypto. But I don't know, this wasn't a question we had on the outline, so I'm not sure if you want to answer it or not. But like, what are we still waiting for? Like for Americans, like what's kind of the law that's like holding up, you know, people like you and like MakerDAO and like all these other, you know, people from like having their platforms like usable in America? Is there like some blatant law?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the short answer is, like, I think we're moving in the right direction. The long answer, I'll give two caveats. The first is, you see a lot of folks get aggressive in this administration because it feels like the laws are loosening, but they're not clear yet. And so they're going ahead and filing ETFs for random alt tokens, right? It's like, okay, come at me, SEC. If you aren't able to tell me it's illegal, then is this technically deemed kosher? Is it okay? I don't know, right? And so you have a lot of folks moving more aggressively. But there's always a fear that, who's to say in the next administration will things revert and these guys get punished? Nobody knows. And so there's a kind of a risk-reward trade-off that a lot of folks are kind of considering right now.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. I was at the Trump meme coin holder dinner this past weekend, and he gave this, like, you know, fiery speech. It was awesome. And yeah, I think he really is, you know, all of his administration, his cabinet, people are like, you know, obviously all in on Bitcoin, whether it's, you know, Scott Bessin or Howard Lutnick, even RFK, I saw he had like a bunch of Bitcoin, and who else, you know, David Sachs. And so it's like, everybody is like all in on crypto. They want to like make it like, you know, a big part of American culture and the American financial system. So I am hopeful that like by the end of this presidency, or hopefully not by the end, but hopefully as it kind of continues along, like he's just going to blow the doors open, open the floodgates. American people are going to be able to like use every single DeFi platform. And it's like those DeFi platforms are going to feel comfortable like coming into this market and like all that kind of stuff. But right now you're right. It's like that gray area, that sort of like nebulous sort of like, is it okay? Is it not? That just keeps so many people out, even though it's like, yeah, you might not be breaking the law. It's just people don't even want to like risk even just a chance or whatever. So it's such a trip.
Part of that equation is also, if you think of America as a company and their number one cash cow product is the financial TradFi ecosystem today, mm-hmm, likes of JP Morgan, BlackRock, are you willing to introduce a new product that could potentially cannibalize this cash cow, right? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, well, only if it makes sense that it's a win-win situation. So perhaps they're working through figuring out how, you know, the TradFi guys can get a piece of it too.
And yeah, no, I know they're making a big push for stable coins too, and how,
yeah,
you know, there's we're currently kind of like running out of buyers for like US debt, except the stable coins, right? The, you know, Tether, USDC, you know, whoever, like there are, a lot of them are backed by you know, short-term treasuries. And so I think he said right now there's $300 billion or something in stable coins, and looking to like boost that to like $2 trillion or something like that. So if stable, and if you, I think somebody, not at the event, but somebody was doing an analysis on this, like if you got, if you kept the current ratio of Bitcoin valuation to stablecoin valuation or market cap, like a $2 trillion stablecoin, this was actually, I think it was David Sachs who said it, a $2 trillion stablecoin market cap would equate to like a $20 trillion Bitcoin market cap. Like that would be crazy. So it's like you have a big flood of cash coming in, a lot of American companies winning. I think, you know, that does, you know, kind of stem off to crypto companies. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Essentially there would be like mutual growth is what you're saying. And that growth in one sector would be growth in all sectors, especially when it's something that is as pivotal as the stablecoin space, because that's used as liquidity in all the other sectors. And so I think both of you made a really good point where maybe that's what we are waiting on. Maybe we're waiting on a little bit stronger legislation or regulation on the stablecoin front, you know, like the Genius Act is kind of talked about. Maybe we are waiting, or maybe the government is waiting for these TradFi players to get their feet really dug into the crypto space so that we can have this mutual growth where TradFi in the US is growing, and they're growing because crypto is growing. But, you know, maybe they're saying, hey, you guys better get ready. And, you know, who knows? Like, we're theorizing here, but maybe they're behind closed doors here saying, you guys need to adopt this because we want this sector to grow so that you can grow. And if you grow, the US grows, and we all win at the end of the day. So who knows? I mean, maybe that's what we're waiting on.
Reality is stranger than fiction now. So I feel like anything is possible.
Yeah. I also saw Trump's, you know, media company, DJT, just announced recently they're buying up $2.5 billion of Bitcoin in like a MicroStrategy, basically copycat. So like everybody's doing that. And then WorldFi Liberty, which is another sort of thing that the Trump organization is affiliated with. Like they have like this, you know, a bunch of crypto. They have a stable coin. I think it's USD1 or something like that. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this all shakes out. But Tim, I want to make sure that we highlighted everything on Mantle that should have been highlighted. Was there anything that we didn't touch on yet that we should riff on for a bit?
I think that we're mostly excited about, right? Those two new products, that are solved as bridges to onboard retail and TradFi into crypto. So happy to riff on other topics. Happy to go deep as well.
Yeah, no, I think we totally nailed it. You know, the neobank, the index, I mean, these are all things that are going to bring on, like you said, the next $1 trillion of market cap to crypto, hopefully the next 1 billion users. And it's going to be really big. You know, I'm really excited about everything y'all are building at Mantle. If we zoom out, what are the, you know, kind of like as we wrap things up, are there any macro trends that you're looking at that could be, you know, tailwinds to what you're building or potentially even headwinds?
Yeah, I mean, interest rates are funky, right? Like ETH, if you stake it, it's about, was it 3-4%? I haven't checked the last where it's
something
yielding.
Like that, yeah.
So that's why it's not as attractive, because you can get US Treasury, right? Like
the high hurdle rate now.
Yeah. backed by the full force and might of the American military. So if that goes below, right, if it goes below meaningfully, what we see then, folks flock to Ethereum, and therefore we'll get more altcoin season, because if you're not going to get any meaningful safe return, like if you're at, you know, 0.5 or 1%, it doesn't really make sense, right? You're going to, people, retail is going to start YOLOing that. And I think the second thing is just look at other types of policy changes that could be act as stimulants in the economy, right? In terms of the opposite of austerity measures, you know, indirect quantitative easing, like Trump is doing to incentivize, you know, was it more births in the country? People, like babies get like $5,000.
Yeah, I heard talk account, about that.
Right? Like, cool. My first question is, how do I put this into like Bitcoin, right? Like, you're going in, you might get that 21 instance again, but who knows? So I think macro-wise, a lot of it is just focusing on liquidity cycle as it relates to the interest rate changes.
Yeah, and those interest rates, you know, it's something that most people really don't think about. I mean, I you know, I'm not like thinking day in and day out about different staking rates and then kind of normalizing them against interest rates and being like, oh my God, you actually have a negative real yield on your stake when, you know, kind of risk adjusted against like, you know, a short-term treasury bill. But like the interest rate cuts are going to have like a multiplying effect, like if they ever come. I mean, because people are just going to say, okay, now I'm getting less yield on my cash. So that $7.5 trillion that's in money market funds is going to start coming into you know, stocks and crypto and all that kind of stuff. But also, people are going to lock it up in the stake because, like, oh, well, you know, you're still going to be able to get a high yield staking different assets. So it's going to be like a doubling effect. So that's kind of a calculus that I hadn't really thought about yet. But
and when you really think about it, right, it matters because a lot of the capital is sitting in the fixed income market, right? And then you think about, okay, who are the decision makers behind that? Is it a small investment committee? Is it a handful of people? What are they thinking? What are they talking about, right? Eventually, are we just saying it's a handful of people who, if they're susceptible to groupthink, and in today's world, internet, hive mind, you know, move so quickly in one direction, plus you can buy tokens or whatever stocks with one click. That's why attention drives these markets, right? That's why things move so quickly. So, and when you really think about it, I think we're going to be in a period of hyper reflexivity, just upside, downside, upside, downside.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. I mean, we certainly saw that exactly play out in April, right? I mean, when we had just, it was the end of the world, right? For so many people, like the first couple of weeks of April was like, oh my God, Liberation Day. But it's actually just like, we're all dying day. And then like it, you know, the month ended higher and like everybody kind of crushed it in April if you just like kind of held through that volatility. And so, yeah, it's crazy. And like, you know, break of this all time high on the S&P or the NASDAQ, like, you know, when that comes, it's like, people are going to be like, oh my God, did I really, you know, sell everything because I thought Trump was going to like ruin the world. I think it was like a huge case of just like systemic, like Trump derangement syndrome, like along with like many other factors and stuff. But like at the end of the day, people just, people got shaken out. And so we'll see what happens, But Tim, man, this was awesome. We're really pumped that we got to talk to you, and we hope we can bring you back on again soon, because there's a million more things that we could unpack. But where could people kind of follow along with your journey personally, as well as Mantle?
Yeah, so you can follow our Twitter accounts. If you can include a link in your show notes, I think that would be great. So that would be the easiest place to get latest and greatest updates.
Perfect. So find Mantle on Twitter/X. And yeah, Tim, thank you so much for your time today. And we hope to see you back again soon. Everybody listening at home, thank you for watching. Come back again next week. We'll have some more incredible guests for you.
Lowe's knows you want the best for dad. This Father's Day, help him take on any project with big deals on DeWalt. Right now, get a free XR8 amp hour battery when you buy select DeWalt tools. That's not all. Get up to 2 free select tools when you buy a select DeWalt 20 volt max battery kit. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a work load is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.